hope that you have dealt with the TV situation, and those who are still sleeping, they will do so whilst we continue with the meeting. Let me welcome everybody present here in this meeting this morning. Firstly, we would allow a round of introductions, but just before we do that, let's see if there are any apologies that we've got still not done.
Good morning. There are two apologies. The first one is from Honorable Murray. He apologized that he won't be able to attend the meeting, but he didn't give me a reason. The second one is from Honorable Charlie. He apologized that he won't be able to attend the meeting due to ill health. Honorable Tindo and Honorable Dexter apologized that they will be coming late. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any other apologies that you would want to table? Anyone? Yes, Honorable Sondo.
Sir, thank you very much. I would leave the meeting earlier because I've got a very, very serious business that I need to attend to.
Thank you. Anybody else? All right. Yes, let's just do a quick round of introductions for the ease of record. My name is Fred Goner. I'm the chairperson of this portfolio committee.
And then Kandaskaka, committee secretary.
Stumpeni Ngobo, committee researcher.
Chibedi Ramuncha, CEO of the Council for Geoscience.
Jivela Ngatepe, CFO of the Council for Geoscience.
And Kumoto Wakimunye, assistant on the board for the Council for Geoscience.
Mutombi Ngzuli Tata, Council for Geoscience, Marketing and Communication.
Khara Krayan, Council for Geoscience, Executive Manager.
Amikita Ramasava from Mintech and Corporate Services.
Makapo Makapola from Mintech, GM Research and Development.
Tinamaza, the board member from Mintech.
I'm Irim Gomez, I'm the president and CEO of Mintel.
Roger Paul, General Manager Business.
Peter Craven, General Manager Technology, Mintel.
Please always take the
truth
through the chair. Chris Dallas, I'm assisting the work of the committee.
Manda Khasmeni from Ministry.
Hendrik Schmidt, member of this committee.
Eric Lucas, member of the committee.
Good morning, my name is Chris Khulu. I'm a member of this committee.
I'm Faith Bikani, a member of the committee.
I'm Rose Soto, member of the committee.
Can we hear from those who are sitting just behind? Please come closer to a mic.
Kirsten Fennick from Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
I'm Henry Tweedy and I'm assisting
Hendrik Smet.
Morning, I'm Joseph Katanga from the DMA, or DMR, sorry.
Thank you very much. No, she's assistant to Honorable Schmidt. Yeah. thank you very much. Welcome back, Honorable members. Just matters of housekeeping before we get into the agenda of the day.
firstly to do with the program and some feedback on some of the processes that we have been handling. As we all are aware that the parliament is rising at the end of the month, but we still have a meeting that will take place on Tuesday next week, where we had been expected to listen to Alesco Development Foundation. If you remember, you took a decision to subpoena them to appear before you to give account of their activities as well as present audited financial statements, and they have since failed to appear before us. Now, the matter was then referred to the Office of the Speaker, who in turn referred it to the Office of the Chair of Chairs, and we've had an interaction between myself and the Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Public Enterprises, and then an agreement was reached that indeed your resolution was in order, and that the processes will move on. So we, unfortunately, at this stage, are waiting to get the final response from the Office of the Speaker and the Office of the Chair of Chairs. So it might well be that this afternoon we will hear, because we are meeting the Chair of Chairs this afternoon in terms of how far are they down the line in terms of that. But we felt that on that day, so that it doesn't go to waste, and also for us to catch up with our program, we will deal with the state diamond trader, we will deal with the regulator, and we will deal with PASA next Tuesday. And then, honorable members, there is in the last days of the month, a very important workshop that we have agreed upon with yourselves. That we need to speak to the department and ask them to come and brief us on the legislative framework. All laws that are administered by DMR. The reason for this is very simple and straightforward, that there are new members in the committee. We want to bring them up to stream. But secondly, there are amendments that are coming. It is important, therefore, to understand what is currently there so that we can easily relate to when we process the amendments that would be presented. As we have heard in the budget vote debate, the minister indicated quite clearly that they are working on amendments on the Mine Health and Safety Act, they are working on the amendments on the MPRTA and other laws. So that workshop is taking place. We are choosing an area called Saldanha. Originally, we wanted to go to Richards Bay so that we can also have a benefit of visiting a rehabilitated mine, which apparently is billed as one of the success stories. But unfortunately, the funders of this strategic workshop are unable to fund air travel and accommodation. So, therefore, we were then requested to look at a venue within Western Cape. That's why we then are looking at Saldanha. We are told it's a nice venue which will enable us to, in a more relaxed fashion, to deal with these matters before us. But I think also we want to get an indication from members who will be in attendance so that we don't unnecessarily get into fruitless expenditure. Already, Honorable Marais has indicated that he will not be around on those dates. That is, now we will be arriving at the venue on the 29th and we will be there on the 30th and the 1st conducting the workshop. We would want to get an indication from Honorable Members so that we then proceed on this with that absolute clarity and knowledge on the matter itself. And of course, before you comment, let's remind you that in the next term, if the proposed amendments in the legislation are submitted, we'll prioritize that, whatever amendments that will be coming our way. But we have outstanding matters that we have been handling in this term that we could not conclude on. Among those is this matter that I referred to, which is the subpoena of the Alex Scott Development Foundation. We will have to process the outstanding report on the study tour in Chile and Bolivia. We'll have to conclude on the public hearings on the state-owned, on the establishment of the state-owned mining company. We'll have to conclude our public hearings on the mining charter. We have to deal with our recent visit to Northern Cape so that we then handle that. We'll have to make follow-up on the Namakwa Development Fund Trust. There are quite worrisome developments that we are informed of that are taking place as they appeared before us, and we had agreed with them in terms of how should they proceed forward, including matters of processing a forensic auditing, which they are busy with. But we're not sure how through these reports. They will come in and clarify them. That apparently they are discussing or have agreed to loan a mining company sum of 16 million rand for it to acquire work that is being put forward by DBS Consolidated Mines. Now, we are going to be writing a letter to them to come before us so that we can then understand exactly what is this. Is this a loan? Is this the acquisition of a stake or what? Because we can't, in the midst of discussing with them how they are handling the public funds, and them also taking this kind of a decision of parting with the whooping 16 million rand to a private firm. Indeed, if that is true, but we're working on that. Then there's an issue that we need to close off, the matter of Aurora. We know that Aurora, in terms of the developments that have taken place, they have been taken off the mines in Grootvlei and Orkney. But we need to know what is the status of those two mines, and what are the outstanding issues pertaining to the matter to do with Aurora. And then lastly, we would have to have a visit, an oversight visit to the province of Limpopo, because that's one province that we have not as yet visited in terms of our oversight work. So, yes, Honourable Members, that's about the program. Any comments, and also the indication of the attendance on the 30th and the 1st at the workshop. Thank you. Honourable Khululu.
Thank you very much, Chair. On the issue of attending that workshop, I'm afraid that I won't make it because already I had committed to attend to the study visit with the other committee that I belong to, that is public enterprise.
When is that?
That is tomorrow. Oh, sorry. That is tomorrow. Isn't it that visit? It's, when is it?
The workshop is on the 30th of June
and
the 1st of July.
Ah, okay. So that's
not this weekend.
I don't know if it's tomorrow. Okay, fine. I'll attend.
Okay.
And then on the issue of the 16 million that was borrowed to the other private company by which one, by the way?
The
fund, yeah.
The allegation is that NTFT.
Yeah.
Has lent money
to
this private company.
Yeah. I was going to say that provided that fund, they are going to pay back with interest,
if they're going to get maybe say 5 million interest on top of the 16 million when they bring it back, then it's no problem. But if at all they're going to give it like that and we don't know the terms and conditions, then it's going to be a problem. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Honorable Sonder.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I'm available for the watchman for the workshop. Secondly, I take interest in this kind of an investment if it is true. I've never seen logic in taking coal to Newcastle, but we'll see it when it emerges. Thank you.
Honorable Lucas.
Yes, I'll attend. But the issue about the Aurora is a worrying issue. I still see we're not looking at the people, the employees, and that is that worries me tremendously.
Thank you very much. Honorable Mila.
Chair, in terms of... yes, I will attend. In terms of the public hearings we're supposed to have, I'd still like to reconfirm and make and give a reminder about the fact that women in mining, we also still owe them a hearing, Chairperson, and I think it's important that it also becomes part of our future plans that we actually have. Either they come to Parliament or we go out to one of the provinces, but there's an outcry that, in honesty, they're not getting the relevant attention they need. And the group of people are still very much affected in terms of small-scale mining, where they're having challenges in terms of the department, especially to have prospecting rights and mining rights. And I feel that we need to give it more attention as well. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable Schmidt.
I'm available. I think we just need to look at all the facts on that other issue which was raised, TFC or TFTN, or before one makes any pronouncement on the matter, but I'm available. Thank you.
Honorable Lucas?
Sorry.
I just say it's a pity that we didn't go to Richard Spain, because that's a good example where you see an environmental issue and mining working hand in hand. And that could, for future, because we keep on making these two different issues, and I do believe that environmental issue, environment and mining could work hand in hand. And tourism.
Okay, thank you very much. No, that was the intention, Honorable Lucas, that first we have first-hand experience in terms of the sterling work that we're told is being done there. Maybe at the approval level they may reconsider, I don't know. For now, this is their initial response that, look, we can fund you, but we won't be able to fund accommodation and flights. Of course, everything is about negotiations. If you talk to people, you might get a different response depending on the motivation that you advance. And yes, Honorable Schmidt, the issue, that's why we say it is an allegation at the moment, but it's an allegation that has reached public domain. And hence we feel that we need to call those that are responsible to determine the facts ourselves and indeed then pronounce thereafter. And so for now, we can't say this way or that way, except at the time when we get absolute clarity. In fact, even before they come for a meeting here, I called them to say I want clarity at my level as the chairperson, just to understand, so that if it is true, we then arrest the situation before it becomes an issue with the communities in the Northern Cape. And indeed, Honorable Lucas, matters pertaining to Aurora is to do with the workers there. Whether, as the fact stands now, Aurora management systems is out of the management of those two mines. But the issue is, have they been able to pay the outstanding monies that they were supposed to pay? Have the Department of Labor played its role in terms of the compliance order that they did get from the court compelling Aurora to pay those outstanding monies? What's the issue about the pension funds, provident funds, contributions, UIF, and all of that? And over and above that, looking at the liquidators, the remaining liquidators, what is the future situation in as far as those two mines are concerned? And of course, indeed, looking at the environmental, impact that, was given rise as a result of lack of pumping out of water in those two mines. So there's still outstanding questions that we need to engage on and deal with and find a closure, a proper closure on the matter. So that also, as we have agreed, that we would want to prevent the occurrence of this thing in any other company into the future. Honourable members, then, with those housekeeping matters being handled and dealt with, let us then get to the agenda. Let's give over to Council for Geosciences to talk us through their strategic plan. You're going to need this thing, eh? Okay, please remove that paper there.
I'm a board member at the Council for Geoscience. Our chairperson, Professor Ngoto, couldn't make it today. He sent his apologies. Dr. Rangenja, our CEO, will take us through the presentation, and he'll also introduce the executive members that are here with us. Thanks.
Thank you, chairperson. Our team has already introduced itself there. We have put together a presentation for honorable members, and it is structured as shown there. We will discuss, present to you the vision, the mission, and the values of the organization, talk about the mandate, and then the budget, challenges, and measures to address these challenges, and then we also look at the strategic performance objectives as captured in our balanced scorecard. And then I think what's critical also is to share with you some of the key geoscience programs and projects, and then I'll touch on human capital in the organization. Our vision is as shown there, leading earth science solutions, and our mission is to provide expert earth science information and services to improve the management of natural resources and the environment for a better quality of life for all. We also have four values, innovate and create through teamwork, excel through quality and performance, value diversity through trust and respect, and invest in the organization's people. The organization actually derives its mandate from the Geoscience Act of 1993, and the Act actually empowers the organization to systematically map the country both onshore and offshore, and also undertake basic geoscience research into the nature and origin of the rock, to collect, curate all geoscience data, and also act as a national geoscience repository. We are also mandated to render geoscience knowledge services and advice to state, and manage a number of geoscience facilities. Basically, these are national geoscience facilities on behalf of the country. These are facilities such as the museum, National Museum, National Core Shed, and the National Geoscience Library. We also are mandated to undertake commercial geoscience services and products to the national and international clients. But what is very important is that when we develop our strategy, we always ensure that the strategy is aligned to government program of action, DMR strategy, especially the new mining growth strategy, and also DST National Research and Development strategy. This is the unaudited financials of the organization for 2010-2011, and also the multi-year budget for the period 2011-2012 up to 2013-2014. The second column there is actually the budget which we had budgeted for the previous year. And the third column, these are unaudited financials. They basically show that we will end up with a surplus of about 15 million rand, which is, I think, a really good achievement on behalf of the organization. If you take into consideration that for the year 2009-2010 financial year, we ended up with a loss of 22 million rand. So we really have sort of, in a way, stabilized the organization from where we were in 2009-2010. The fourth column is basically the budget for this current year, that is 2011-2012. If you look at that column and you look at the row which is entitled government grant, the grant which we have received is 137 million rand, and there is also a grant which came in the form of water ingress grant. This is the first time that we have actually been given this money up front, and it's ring-fenced for water ingress research programs, especially with regards to acid mine drainage. Sales and contract, we are expecting to actually get about plus minus 66 million rand in terms of sales and contract. This will be the services which we provide for private sector and even for government institutions. Sundry income, this is basically interest which is in the bank and some of the foreign exchange rates which we get. We have budgeted about 2.6 million. And the total income for the year will be about 223 million rand. Expenditure in terms of personnel costs is around 131 million rand. And bazaaries, we have actually reduced the funding of bazaaries because of the challenges which we had. But since the organization is sort of stabilized, we'll be revisiting this situation again. Commercial project costs, that is, we are expecting to incur cost of 29 or 30 million rand to actually make 66 million rand if you look at it. From the sales and contracts. Overhead and operational costs will be about 59 million rand, and the total expenditure for the organization is about 221 million rand. We still have capital expenditure here, which is equipment and land and building. Vehicles, we don't plan to buy vehicles this year, but we'll relook at the situation towards the middle of the year. But at the end of it, we are budgeting for no surplus and no loss. This is a very important slide because it basically shows what happens with the grant of the state. And what we do is we say, look, we have got this grant for, if you look at the third column, this one, in terms of personnel cost, we'll and care about 131 million rand. So after paying the staff, we'll be left with about 4.5%, which is 6 million rand basically to do the work of the organization. It's quite clear that without doing commercial work, we can't actually perform some of the tasks which we are supposed to perform, especially mapping the country, training young scientists. So we have to go out there and perform commercial work. And when times were tough, especially with regards to the situation, financial situation, the global financial situation, we had to cut down. We couldn't really perform most of the functions. which we are supposed to do. In compiling our strategy, we looked at the challenges which the organization is actually facing. Firstly, we always talk about this here, but we have put it here, the whole issue of the grant of the grant allocation of the organization. I think it has to be looked at because it's very important for us to get a proper funding if we have to address that mandate which I earlier on referred to. A declining commercial project, it was a big challenge for the organization. It was not the making of the organization. The climate there was very, very difficult. There were very, very few projects out there. And that's why we ended up with 22 million rand in the financial year 2009-2010. Human resources, it is a challenge. We are realizing something, that is, we are really losing some of the highly skilled scientists, which is unfortunate, because you need to retain those scientists in order to train the young scientists. So that's a challenge for us there. And this means that we need to look at fast-tracking the training of young scientists. So investment into the organization should then go into training of these young scientists. Low morale, when times were tough, especially during the 2009-10 financial year, we had to cut a lot of costs. And some of the areas, I think, affected the staff in terms of their morale. We have to work on that. We realize that it is a challenge. In terms of systems, we are really working hard in terms of obtaining ISO accreditation. We can't operate without obtaining this ISO accreditation. Implementation of the Geoscience Amendment Act is also going to be a challenge for us. We are working very closely there with the department to address this, and renewing, addressing aging scientific equipment is a very important issue there with us. In terms of stakeholder challenges, we have to be relevant as an organization, and we feel that we have to contribute towards economic growth of the country as a whole. In putting together the strategy, especially because we were experiencing those losses, the board and management had to look at the situation as to how do we address it. And we came with what we called short-term and medium-term strategies. It's a two-pronged way of addressing the situation. And in terms of the short-term strategy of the organization, it was mainly to say, look, let's turn around the organization financially. We can't live with an organization which is running at 22 million rand loss. And we also had to look at increasing and expanding investment into the statutory program of the organization and repositioning the organization to address the challenges that will come with the implementation of the Geoscience Amendment Act. And in respect of the short-term strategy, we said, let's simplify the matter. How can we address this issue? We came with what we call measures and focal points to manage the situation. The first one was, we need to ensure that, you know, our relationship with the DMR is improved and we provide good services for the organization. And we also had to look at marketing the organization, developing new business, and improving communication for the organization. And in this regard, we had to say, look, we have to develop strategic alliances. And we identified departments which are critical for the organization in terms of the strategic alliances. We identified DMR, our mother organization, Department of Science and Technology. We assigned people to actually improve those relationships with the Department of Science and Technology and look at how we can work together. And I think a lot of benefits came out of this relationship. Water Affairs, we are working very closely with them, especially with regards to the acid mine drainage. Environment Affairs, that's a department which I think there is still much to be done. They still have to work hard to develop the strategic alliances. ESCOM, we focus on ESCOM, and they have now realized that they can really benefit from the Council for Geoscience. We have got a huge project with ESCOM. We'll touch on it later on. Invoicing and collection, that was a very important thing, because when you focus on invoicing and collection, it helps in terms of even interest when you invest your finances. The other one was cutting costs. That was a very important one. We had to identify all the areas where we can cut costs, overseas, trees, and all those things. And I think it worked. It worked because the organization is now stable financially. We can look forward and see what we can actually do to deliver for the people of South Africa. In terms of the medium to long-term strategy, we focus on ourselves. What is critical is to ensure that we have a long-term sustainability in the organization, okay? Through improving our revenue inflows and profitability. And also the whole issue of Geoscience Amendment Act. It's going to be a huge issue for the organization. We are working hard on that, and we realize that it is important that we focus on that. Addressing stakeholder needs was a very important issue. If you look at our strategic performance objectives, they are captured through our balance scorecard. Okay. The most important thing here is that we are an organization which is focusing on geological mapping, and we have to produce maps for the country in order to attract investment and also attract potential investors in the mining industry. And we have identified that there are about 5 critical maps which we have to produce this current financial year to attract exploration and investment. We'll be looking at also producing another 20 maps and publications in this area. We also measure what is called percentage satisfied customers. At this stage, we're looking at around 80% of our customers being happy. Number of rural development projects in progress, we're looking at 25. Number of environmental related projects in progress, 5. A number of regional and African development projects, which is very important for us, especially even in terms of generating income. We're looking at 22. We also measure our performance in terms of completing our annual technical scientific program, and we're looking at around 85% there. Revenue, total revenue, I've already touched on it there. It's 206. If you include the water ingress funding, it will be 223. In terms of contract revenue, we're looking at 66 million rand, I've touched on that. Sundry income, 2.6, commercial surplus, we are not budgeting for any surplus. The ratio of contract revenue to total revenue, we're looking at 32%. Ratio of external revenue to total revenue, 33%. And number of large tenders submitted, which are basically above 1 million, we're looking at 44, because this is very important to drive this area if you've got to improve the revenue flow into the organization. Ratio of overhead to total cost, we always monitor that. We're looking at 55. Ratio of personal cost to total cost is at 55. Also, we are hoping that we will have this 90% in terms of completion, in terms of implementing the ISO accreditation. It's a very, very long process and a very costly process for the organization, but the organization has to do it. Percentage of completion is per agreement. This is the integrated mine seismic network into the national network. This is basically trying to integrate all the seismic network on our mind with our national seismic network. It's a very important program. I think members of the House, especially the chairperson, assisted us in this program, and we have achieved quite a few milestones in this regard. We have started undertaking some research in this regard, especially looking at the fatalities on the mine. I'll come to that later. To implement the Geoscience Amendment Act, We are working with the Department of Mineral Resources to finalize the regulation. The drive preferential procurement, we have put a target of 45% in terms of preferential procurement. Implement the corporate planning and reporting procedures. Here we're looking at number of audit qualifications. We always say that we should not get any qualification. I'm sure even this current the year which ended last year, we're not going to get any qualification. Net staff turnover, we're looking at -7%. Number of staff enrolled with MSC. This is a very important program for the organization. Of course, we have got young scientists which are coming in the organization. In fact, the majority of our scientists now are very young, and we encourage them to enroll for MSc and PhD. In fact, the young ones, when they join us, we give them 5 years to obtain an MSc degree. It's part of the contract. Because if we don't do it, I think we, the organization, will be in trouble. Number of engineering geologists undergoing training. Why we came with this one is very important in terms of implementing the Geoscience Act, because most of the issues which are there are related to sinkholes and dolomites. So it is very important that we focus on developing engineering geologists to be able to perform the work. I don't think we need more than four, but we just said, you know, it's very difficult to get these people. Let's just put it there as a measure. The board actually requested that it be there. Scientists, as the percentage of total staff, is looking at about 43. It's quite low when you benchmark it against international organizations. We should be looking at around 60%. But we are a developing country. We have got our own challenges here, there, and there. But the 43%, I think, is a good target. Percentage of scientific staff with PhD and MSc is also very important to measure this, because we don't want it to go low. But if scientists with honors degrees can't really help you in terms of acquiring projects and even being competitive in the scientific field. Percentage certified protégés, these are young scientists who are being trained at the organization. We go to them and find out if they are happy or not, which is very important, because sometimes, you know, they are there, they are unhappy, and then you don't actually pick it up. Number of papers and articles published, are looking at 35. Number of declared projects with intellectual property. And this is the first time we brought it in. It's a very important one. We thought we should put it in there. We hope that we have one this year. Number of projects with external collaborators, 55. And number of strategic science partnerships, 14. In terms of people, we always measure the mood in the organization. We satisfied staff, we put a target of 65. And in terms of employment equity, white, black, we're looking at 38-62, and male and female, we're looking at 54-46 ratio. Now, going to our program, if you look at our program at the organization, we could actually subdivide them into what we call six scientific focus areas. The heart of the organization is geoscience mapping. That's why we have got it in the center. So all our programs in the organization will actually fall in these seven scientific focus areas. The first one, which is the center, the geoscience mapping, which is geological mapping, geochemical mapping, geophysical mapping, and remote sensing. That's the heart of the organization. Even the majority of our funds are going towards geoscience mapping. Because without geoscience mapping, you can't do any geoscientific research at all. You are just going to be, I would say, draining in most cases if you don't do your geoscience mapping. And all countries in the world undertake geoscience mapping. If you don't undertake geoscience mapping, it's like a person having a house not knowing what is in his or her room. So you must understand your house, map your house, know that I've got a toilet there, I've got a bathroom there, I've got this, in order for you to live there. But if you just stay and not map your account, you even build, you know, infrastructure in places where you are not supposed to build. You build infrastructure near where you could find oil, you know. So it is important that you map the country. From there you say, how am I going to utilize this country? Right after that, you say, look, after mapping, let's have this focus in terms of mineral resources development. So the information which the geologists use to map, they will use it to produce mineral resource information for the country. They will use it for environmental geosciences. They will use it for water geohydrology. The role which the Council for Geosciences now plays in acid mine drainage, it wouldn't be playing this role if they had not undertaken geoscience maybe. You see, even yesterday, there are public hearings there. We are actually playing the leading role there. 14 of our scientists actually compiled that report of water geoscience, of acid mine drainage. And it's because of the work which has been done in terms of geoenergy is a new one which we put there because we feel it is very, very important. Here we have got projects which are linked to coal. We have got projects which are linked to geothermal energy. Education and information, we feel, is part of our role in engineering geoscience. A very important one, especially with regards to sinkholes. I've already talked about this. The Amendment Act, it actually revolves around engineering geoscience. This index map shows what we have achieved as a country in terms of mapping the country. We map the country at different scales. This is one in 250,000, that is one in a quarter million. The green here shows the areas which have been mapped, and the maps are published, the maps are available to the public. Any member of the public can come in and say, I want the geological map of that area. They can buy that map. Okay? And the blue areas here, we had to revise this map because the mapping was of poor quality. And the red here, we have not yet published this map. We are finalizing them. But the field work has been completed. They just have to, it's just some office work which has to be done. But this work took the country plus minus 100 years to do this. And it's just a regional understanding of the organization. Okay. We still have to map the country at a more detailed scale, that is one in 50,000 scale. A huge task for the organization, but we look at the country and say, what can we do? Let's focus on areas whereby there is development, fast development taking place there, so that we should ensure that we know what are the rocks there. And we actually focused on Gauteng. Gauteng will be there. We want to actually complete mapping Gauteng, because if we don't map it now, we leave this situation as it is. Infrastructure will be on those rocks and we will not know what is under Johannesburg. So we want to really finalize that and say, look, let's finalize Pretoria area, Johannesburg area, and ensure that those areas are fully mapped, so that even in future, our future generation can know that we have got these types of rocks there. Even when they decide to build underground trains and whatever they want to know, they will be knowing the types of rocks which are there. So that is one area that we should focus on. We also said, let's focus on Cape Town area there, Eastern Cape area there, KwaZulu-Natal, Polokwane area there, in Polokwane there. So these are the major cities where we just want to focus. Then later on, we look at other areas. In terms of the old group, take the geological map and show the type of minerals which will be on that geological map. We are currently working on this area which we are currently working on this blue area. Okay. And The yellow one, we have basically, we're basically doing in terms of office work and finalizing the map. But the green ones, the maps are there, they are published, people can come and purchase the map. One in 50,000 geotechnical map, this is the detailed work I referred to earlier, it's very important. You can see that we are focusing mainly in Houghton area there, that is mainly for dolomites and sinkholes. With geochemistry, what we do, we take soil samples every square kilometer and analyze the soil samples for the elements in the soil. We analyze for plus minus 50 elements which would be in the soil. The green areas there, we have sampled those areas, analyzed them, the maps are available, the data is available. Any person who wants to purchase that information is free to purchase that information. The yellow ones we have sampled, we haven't yet finalized, analyzing and producing the maps. It's a very extensive program here because it involves using a helicopter, and the helicopter has to land every square, every kilometer must land. People must jump out and take the soil, put it in the helicopter. So it's a very expensive program. But what is important is those soils. We don't throw those soils away. We store the soils. So even after 10, 40, 100 years, people can go back to those soils and analyze them and say, I think those guys missed something, you know. With technology, things change. So it's actually an investment for the country, a very important program, even for environmental baseline development, because once you have covered the country in terms of taking those soil samples, you'll have an idea of the elements and the pollution in the country. And if future people come and pollute, you can say to them, the pollution levels were like this. You came here, you put your factory, okay, you have polluted, you must pay. So it's a very important program for the country. Geophysics, here we fly the country. We have got equipment, geophysical equipment, which can actually help us in making the rock tank. We've already flown the country at a line spacing of 1 kilometer. And now we're now reflying the country at the line spacing of 200 meters. That is north south line spacing, 200 meters. We've got planes which will be flying at height of about 100 meters. So very, very, very dangerous activity also. We put it on hold when we have had challenges with funding, but since the organization has stabilized, we are going to revisit it. These red areas here, as indicated, there was a future flying when funds are available. We are going to re-look at the budget which I presented there. We said, look, things have stabilized. We have got a new commercial project. I think we'll have additional funding, and then we might fly this one later in the year if funds are available. It's a very important area in terms of geology where very few people have done work on this, and the understanding of the geology there is not great. But we feel that we have to fly. The area is also covered by sand, Kalahari sand. So a lot of people don't know what is below that Kalahari sand. So if we fly that area, we can actually try to understand the rock types below that sand. So geologists have gone there, they have seen sand there, so it's the only way to understand that area to fly it. And there's a huge potential for discovery of minerals in that area. This slide shows stations which we have all over the country. They measure earthquakes on a 24-hour basis. Okay. The green ones there, they are there, they've been there. The red ones have been included to address the whole issue of tsunami, monitoring tsunami on the Indian Ocean. It is a very important program in the organization. it costs us it's 900,000, 1 million rand a year to run the station. And servicing them, because they are all over there, we've got to send technicians, they break, they must go there, service them continuously. So 1 million rand is 1 million rand to run them annually. It's quite a hectic program for the county. This is some of the products which come out of this exercise. We can actually identify areas where there are high activities in terms of seismic events, but it's earthquakes. Those dots there, this is how these are related to the mines. This will be Belcon area, 58 mines there. And the red ones, it will be Cape Town. I don't often like to show this slide sometimes, people. But that's how it is. If you look at the seismic hazard of South Africa, we say that the red areas, this is the areas where this is natural earthquakes here in this area. These are mine related tremors and earthquakes there. So if you want to be safe, perhaps you should go to Eastern Cape. Western Cape. It's fine, but we have got activities here. Here you can pick them up. So the red is.
So tsunami
can just bury Cape Town. No, not it's not going to happen.
NC wishes it.
In our life. I think our expert is there, Dr. Graham can talk about it later on. He can talk about it. He works on tsunamis and all the issues of earthquakes in the country. Maybe later on he can.
There is this scary landscape here in the Western Cape. There's a sea there, if you want to overswept. There's a sea here, just behind us. Now, if waters can just rise this side and rise that side, where else can we run?
We actually want to do a detailed study on this matter.
Yeah.
And we discussed it last week in our management meeting that we should have put a proposal for NTF funding for next year. See if we cannot look at the risk which tsunami would impose on South Africa. Because if you have got the sea around you, you cannot rule it out. We can never rule it out. But this does not mean that we are a high risk area. We are not necessarily a high risk area. I mean, people who are got high risk associated with them are the Japanese, Indonesia, those areas. Sustainable development in mining. These are the projects which are, you know, extremely important. Acid mine drainage, we have played a leading role when it comes to acid mine drainage issues. The team of experts was led by the Council for Geoscience. I was the chairperson of the team of experts. About 14 scientists basically were involved in that project from the Council for Geoscience. Basically, we funded through the grant, you know, doing the work. Even now, we are still involved. We will continue to provide support to government in this regard. It's a very important issue. But fortunately, the department has now, you know, transferred that money to that water ingress money, which I've shown in our budget. We are currently in discussions with the department in terms of the work plan, detailed work plan. We'll be giving it to the DG to approve and the minister to look at it. But it is a very important thing because we're also looking outside the Witwatersrand, friends, the gold mines. We are looking at the coal mines also there. We'll continue to undertake research in that regard. Mine closure and mining environmental legacy, mainly to give support to the Department of Mineral Resources when it comes to this, because we have got quite knowledgeable people there at the organization. Relict and ownerless mines also, we work closely with them, and mine health and safety issues. This one is mainly in terms of the fatalities. That project I talked about, we are working very hard to ensure that it moves to a higher gear. Mineral resources, very important program. We got funding from Eskom to look at coal resources of South Africa. Because people are worried that, you know, we might be running out of coal in South Africa. And there were reports last year, there was a scientist from somewhere in Western Cape who wrote an article that South Africa is going to run out of coal. The likes, it created a huge uproar there, and people are not agreeing with these findings. But we are currently working on this issue of assessing the resources and reserves of South Africa. The project should be completed by end of this financial year. It will, for one, bury this whole story of saying, are we running out of coal? When is the coal going to run out? We should finish the work by end of this financial year. There is a preliminary a report which is out there, but we still have to finalize a few issues there. Also looking at platinum, we are looking at producing a handbook on platinum. Some people are saying, we have all our platinum areas have been taken, but we believe that if we can do some work there, we can actually find areas where there's still some areas which could be looked at, and our scientists are working on that. Mineral exploration, promotion, and target generation. This is focusing on areas where people are not necessarily interested, you know. I mentioned the issue of platinum, whereby we say, look, investors will just look at this and say, we're not interested. That's where we would actually go. Northern Cape, where I showed you that area where we want to fly. Those are the areas where we focus most, because we don't want to be, you know, going to areas where everybody knows that they will find something, especially private sector. Strategic minerals, rare earth minerals, were undertaking research there jointly with the Japanese there. They've assisted us a lot when it comes to technology. They've got the equipment. Our scientists have gone to Japan there, so we're working on that project. Comprehensive test ban treaty. In 1996, the former president Mandela signed this treaty. And South Africa ratified it in 1999. The CGS, we were appointed by the Department of International Relations and Cooperation as the authorized National Data Center for South Africa. We are currently collecting seismological and infrasound data in the country and also in Antarctica. We will continue to perform that function for South Africa. We have got stations which are unmanned, and this involves maintaining the stations and actually collecting the data and ensuring that the data is of high quality. And the uptime for these stations is 98%. In terms of Eskom, I talked about it here. We have been appointed by Eskom to perform what is called probabilistic seismic hazard assessment for Eskom potential nuclear sites. But it's helping them to identify where they can produce a nuclear power plant. This involves characterizing ground motion hazards at this site, and this will ultimately lead to licensing of this site. It's a very important work for the country, and this study is actually being conducted by us. It's the industry goals. I mean, we basically believe that this will set a benchmark for international best practice. That is basically where you see that the Council for Geoscience Scientists are among the top in the world. We are convinced about that. If they would assess us, we are probably among the top 5-10 geological institutions in the whole world. We can stand our own against our international colleagues. The other project I did present it to you last year, but we will be continuing with it. It's all around the sequestration of carbon dioxide. As you know, all the whole issues around environment, people are complaining about pollution of the environment. We are working with Sameri. We are actually the lead agent there, and BASA is actually working also with us, but we are driving the process. As I said earlier, if you don't understand your country, you can't do anything with it. So because we have been mapping the country, we can identify potential areas where we can store this carbon dioxide. And these black spots there, these are the areas where we think that carbon dioxide can be stored in South Africa. It is still at a very, very early stage. We have to do further work. We have produced what is called an atlas, and the area wherever I want to focus is in Eastern Cape. This is this area here in Eastern Cape. It's called the Algar Basin in Eastern Cape. We will be working on it. In fact, our scientists are currently working on that area now to assess it and really come with accurate or more accurate quantification of the volumes which can be stored of carbon dioxide. This does not mean that the country is going to store carbon dioxide. That decision will have to be made later on. But then we're looking at the potential of doing that. Can we store it? If that decision has to be made, it will be made at a different stage and a different environment. But Sameri approached us and said, help us in this regard. And I think we have done an excellent job when it comes to that. The other project which we have started, it's looking at the offshore geological mapping of South Africa. You know, we are talking about mapping the inland, you know. I've shown you those index maps. I've never shown you anything in terms of offshore, the sea. Yeah? Why? Because we've got very, very little information and knowledge about our sea floor. Okay? And the sea floor comprises of... So we have to start to do something when it comes to that. It's, other countries have already started, and you already know about this United Nations program, whereby they've invited countries to come and extend their territory, the water territory. If you look at this slide, this black line here, this black line, this is what South Africa currently owns. Eh? This is our area, this whole area is defined by this black line. Okay? But in terms of this program of the United Nations, okay, we can claim, we've got the potential, this is how I must put it, potential to claim up to this red line. BASA is driving this process. We have participated in it, in that process. So they have actually already submitted South Africa's claim in this regard. And if you look at this area, it's actually bigger than our land. Eh? It's actually bigger than our land. So it creates new opportunities for South Africa. If we can be successful in terms of claiming that area. But even if we are not successful, we will clean some area. So we have to now start to look at our offshore mapping. And what we did, we went to the Department of Science and Technology and presented this issue and said, look, can't we look at a way of starting a program? It should be an integrated program, wherever we look at geology, we look at other issues like biological issues there, we look at the fish in the sea. You know, you put all the scientists together and say, let's look at the program for South Africa. And the Department of Science and Technology were very excited in this regard. And they said, okay, we'll give you funding to develop a business case. Okay. We are currently working on that business case. We've even sent one of our scientists to go and look at India and see what they're doing there in India. We were looking at other countries. And I think it's going to create a new era for the country. We believe also that it will create a whole new industry in terms of giving jobs, doing research in the in the country there. Very important program for South Africa. So, on international front, as a science institution, we interact with our colleagues in many areas. The Organization of African Geological Survey, we were the president of the organization, which was the founding president of the organization, but we are now the secretariat of the organization. Algeria is holding the presidency. Some of the programs which we are involved in respect of the Organization of African Geological Survey is the seismic tectonic map of Africa. This is basically a map which will be showing earthquakes, occurrences of on the continent. We're also looking at what is called One Geology. It's producing a geological map of the world. We are working with the European Geological Survey in this regard. FADAC, we play a major role there. We actually produced a FADAC geological map funded by South Africa from our funds. And I think it's something which is great for the region. FADAC was really happy with this project. They even used that project to develop a geohydrological map of FADAC. In fact, they asked us to help them develop that geohydrological map of FADAC. IGOS here is a collaboration program with the European Geological Survey, also a very important one, where we're looking at developing a standardized data framework for collecting geoscience data. We're working with Botswana. They have actually basically contracted us here. They want to look at the geological institution, so they have asked us to help them. We are working with the British Geological Survey in that regard. Papua New Guinea, we've got the geological project there to be coming to an end this year. Uganda, we are working there. The program will continue this year and even next year. Madagascar, we had challenges there when there was a coup there because we couldn't depend and all those things, but the World Bank, which was funding the program, has come forward and said, look, we can now continue with Madagascar. They will now fund them again. So we will be working there and finalizing the work there. In terms of human capital, our strategy there is anchored on this pillars which I will discuss. We believe we need to continue to transform the organization. We have achieved, but we need to continue. It's a long, long process, and especially in terms of training young scientists. You need to train young scientists and ensure that you can have scientists which have got plus, minus, 7-year experience. Those are the real scientists which now you can now start to allow to work independently. But scientists which have got less than 5-year experience, it's very, very difficult, to put them in large programs. But we always put them, like in the ESCOM project, we have got young scientists who are actually shadowing the senior scientists. Retaining skilled scientists, I've mentioned there, is a very, very serious thing for the organization. We are monitoring it. If it gets really out of control, you might have to go and look for those who have retired or some of the consultants and let them come in and mentor the young scientists. Because if they all leave, who will mentor those scientists? It takes plus minus 5 years to train a scientist from university. Frustrating the training of young scientists, I've talked about it. Training programs which we have put in place there to the bursary program there, internship program are working with N2A. In fact, DST has also said they will come to the party and assist us. We are expecting an answer sometime next week from DST. They said, look, we are realizing your problem. We will put some money so that you can take in some intent to assist you in this. Department of Science and Technology. Okay, so so it will be NTA, DST. We have already put a proposal in forward to DST to assist us in this regard. Mentorship program, we have got a very solid one, and we even monitor it on annual basis. We have also started the geological field school. It has been running for some time because we realized that some of the, actually almost all of the graduates who join us, you know, they need intensive training in terms of mapping. This is the geological mapping field school. We must put them there. We put them there for one full year. Say, look, forget about anything. We just have to learn what, how to map. Because that's our game. We have got to teach people how to map. If you start to put them here and here and here, that will be after 1 year. Then they can, if we put them for 1 year, then they can choose after that, oh, I want to focus on what? I want to focus on engineering. I want to focus on that. But initially, they must go through the mapping school. This is a comparative figure showing the race profile of the organization. We, as I said, we have really achieved. It's just that, you know, with the challenges which we faced when we didn't have finances, we had to stop employing people and all those things. But we were going there. You can see it sort of flattened there because of what we experienced in 2009-2010. If we did not experience that, we'd be far by now, I'm quite sure. Because we didn't employ new people for 2 years, basically. Comparative figures in terms of gender, it has gone down, and the reason here, it was because when people were resigning, as we were cutting the cost, we froze the position. In fact, the board even said, look, you must freeze the position. Only employ where there are critical skills needed, you know? But basically most of the employment we have to free. But we have to relook at everything now since things have stabilized in the organization. Professionals were almost 50-50 now, black and white, in the organization. Bursaries is a very sad one. It went down, that is due to cost-cutting measures. We have to revisit it and bring it back to where it was in 2008. I talked about the challenge which we have in terms of young scientists. If you look at the age profile of the organization, you can actually see from this slide that most of our scientists are young. Yeah. So when you have got young scientists like this, what you need to do, you need to invest in training. Serious, aggressive training which you have to put in place, or else you will be in serious trouble. This is just one of our field schools. I mean, it's basically our field school in Polokwane where people have been trained there. Just I've talked about it. And this brings me to the end of the presentation.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Geosciences Council. One of the members there of the presentation, let us engage on that presentation. Honorable Hululu Enokyo, Honorable Lucas, Honorable Schmidt, Honorable Bigani, Honorable Sondo, Honorable Dexter. Over to you, sir.
Thank you very much, Chair. I want to start on this one. Let me thank first the geoscience for the presentation. I want to start on this one of the young scientists, actually. In that, there's one young scientist that I know that keeps on coming to me to ask for opportunities, and
I can't help this young man. It's actually, he's coming from school, and he's been sitting, doing nothing at home. And I've tried, of course, to speak to the department, to MINTEC. Maybe I should try you now. Because he's now even contemplating looking for another job elsewhere. And I see that it's going to be a waste, because this person has done all those that you have mentioned, mapping and all those. He's a geologist, actually. So he's sitting at home doing nothing, and then now he's even thinking of going to sell potatoes, which is very unfortunate. And yet you are looking for more of these people. Which I think we need to give him an opportunity. That will be the first one. The second one is on the question of Robben Island. I see you have mapped the whole country now. I'm going to also map Robben Island because I see these rocks also there. And then on the question of the airborne coverage, do you hire planes, or do you have your own planes to do that kind of work? And then on the question of the instruments for tsunami, in an event, if you could maybe detect this tsunami, how would you alert the general public out there that there is a tsunami on its way, or an earthquake, actually? Do you have those instruments in place to keep us alert? These are just general questions, Honorable Chair. Okay, this other, you spoke about the preferential procurement, actually. I'd be interested to know what is that, actually. I don't understand what is this preferential procurement. For now, let me pause there, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Chair.
Thank you. Thanks for the presentation, Walter. I think there's one of the issues which is really burning is a government grant. I really don't know how you survive to it, because it's a very, you're right on the edge here. If you weren't doing what you're doing, I think we'd have had to close. But more importantly is the skill. What can be really done, because with the finances you have, how are you going to manage to attract the people from outside, because they will definitely demand much more. And then you also mentioned the aging equipment. I think that's also another handicap which needs to be attended to. And all these things cost money. I'm very interested in the small scale mining of South Africa. And our whole intention was to empower the small scale miners. The problem they have is exploration. What can we do about that? Because without exploration, you haven't got a bankable document. And this is the major, major handicap. So I'd be pleased if maybe you won't be able to answer today, or maybe in the future, to just say, what can we do? We need to do it. We need to help these people, because they've been... they've been taken advantage of. They get the prospecting license, and people come in and take it away, and they give them 5%, and they take 95%. And the people end up where they were again. So we need to assist them. The extension of the boundary for offshore, how will this affect our border, the countries that are near us, outsiders? Will we not, unless we can have some sort of a treaty to work together, so because their boundaries will also be extended, and we may start overlapping. And then the other thing with, I'm very interested in the offshore. Do you think, is there a possibility of us finding crude oil?
Thank you very much, Honorable Schmidt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The interesting issue is the income you expect for the 2012 and the 2011 year going forward with regard to water ingress. And I suppose that has to do with, if I understand correctly, acid mine drainage. Just explain your role in it, because I understand that the water department of water affairs is now the lead department, and they've also contracted the services of a tunnel company. I'm not sure whether it was the Rania River tunnel company, but I read of it recently.
TCTA,
yeah. Just your role in it. Secondly, the Mine Health and Safety Council was here last week and indicated the concerns regarding the pro rata increase in fatalities in, on mines this year. I know Dr. Grant, I think it is, gave us an informative session the last time you were here, but there was a project which was running with the mining community, which had to do with the fall of rock and the development of possible projected, expected seismic activities, just update and rate if possible. Then fracking, someone spoke of oil. Fracking, because if all you, I think, would probably be the best position to say, you know, do we have fracking, is there a possibility of whether we like, whether we want it or don't want it, or whether it's environmental concerns or not, that's something else. But whether we do have the resources in order to ensure viable fracking, disregarding all the other issues for the moment. And then just as a matter of last instance, the insufficient grant you complain of, no one can promise any council any grants or increase in grants as you probably realize by now. But what is it that you would be comfortable with in order to fulfill your function having regard to the additional responsibilities in terms of the Council of Geoscience that mentioned that? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Soda.
Thank you, Chair. Looking good to me. The current budget that you have as a council, your indication, Doctor, was that at least you are expecting a surplus by the look of things. How would that surplus perhaps assist you in your skills retention strategy? Because I thought you were going to outline your skills, your scarce skills retention strategy. If you did, I missed it. That is one. Two, how will it contribute to your relook at the bursaries that you need to give to training scientists? And also, link it on, I've seen your graphs there, that you are running low on women, as much as you are trying so much in terms of balancing the gender. One would want to understand what is it that is lowering the gender balance insofar as women are concerned. I think you went to 44, but you are down to 39. What is driving women from the council? The other one is this acid mine drainage. It's funded through grant, as you were saying in the presentation. Is that enough for the how should I put it? The
is that enough to contain the crisis that is carried by this threat of acid mine drainage? Because I'm looking at a situation where if, say, for instance, this is not enough, what other possible source of funding would you want us to assist you on as the committee?
No, I'm just running
out of time. On derelict and ownerless mines, one would want to understand what chunk of your budget does it does work on these mines take away, and why would it be your responsibility as the council, and not of those mining companies that were either there or any other body? I'm asking this question so that at least we can assist each other in tracing those mining companies that left those mines in the state that you found them. You know. I think let me stop there, Chairperson. The other one I'll ask later.
Thank you very much, Honorable Bigani. Then the last person will be Honorable Dexter.
Thank you. Honorable Dexter,
Honorable Bigani. Oh, sorry. You will be the last. Sorry, Mr. Okay, thank you. I'm just interested in knowing the you seem to specify the value of the map. But to what extent are these maps perhaps then bought by, well, if I identify a particular group of people, the small scale miners, and I'd be interested to know the pricing thereof, and of what value would it be for them to prioritize owning such maps? But then the question is, how possible is it to, I don't know what the price is like, or what knowledge people have of the importance of the maps in terms of buying them to be able to do proper mining. What would the value then be, and what are the possibilities of cutting down on those prices if it's an impossible amount, considering that you have to spend so much to have those maps? And then in relation to the carbon dioxide pocket, you said what? The sequestration of carbon dioxide. We learn every day. That's an interesting word. I'm just thinking of the issue that's coming up now, and there's no indication as to whether we are involved or not. This thing of the shale gas. How would you relate the two in terms of importance, or an area to focus on in terms of research? Where you prioritize the other, and if you have any role that you are playing as geosciences on the research work on shale gas, could you say a little something about that, just to get an understanding of, perhaps improve our understanding of the differences thereof, and if the one work wouldn't clash with the other work? Because I see there are some landmarks that indicate possibilities of having these carbon dioxide pockets. Then, I won't repeat myself, Sharon. The other issues have been asked already by the other members. And one of them was the issue of the gender. I was also interested in knowing, are you feeling that there is an attraction of improved females in the business, or are they running away? And your programs, in terms of perhaps your projects or so, to what extent do you also prioritize then targeting women-related projects, especially considering that there's quite a significant number in mining of women, and not much is being said or heard as to what extent or to how far or how well are you trying to attract them to the industry? in terms of research work that needs to be done. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Director.
Commissioner, I'm not sure whether the previous speaker said whether was asking whether attractive women are coming to the industry or whether the industry is attracting women. I'm not sure. But anyway. Okay, my I don't have any problem. I'm just I just want clarity.
Men must stop this thing of always thinking that women are related to just being and affection.
I didn't say that, sir. I didn't say that always were. I just asked for clarity as to what your question. But anyway, there are just two issues, Chair. I'm interested about the talking of the, about the decline in commercial projects and revenues. So, you know, I'd like just a bit of an explanation as to what's going on there, why that's happening. Because obviously it impacts on the losses and the issue about the revenue for this coming year. And then in terms of the cost-cutting, Chair, it seems very bizarre to me that you would cut costs for an institution like this that doesn't have such a huge budget and play such a strategic role. Were these cost-cutting measures just things that were done across the board, in other words, a blunt instrument by Treasury that impacted on the council? Or was the council targeted for particular cost cutting because of, you know, it was seen not to be money well spent?
Thank you very much. That was direct to the point. Let's give you all the questions so that you respond in package. Just following up on what Honourable Dexter has raised in terms of the your funding, and which is an area that was raised by other members as well. If you look at the slide that deals with unaudited financial statements and the other slide following that, the grant versus personnel costs, we're picking up that in terms of your real function, you're spending far less. And we understand that it's as a result of the insufficient grants that you are receiving, which then brings us back to the question of, are there plans in pipeline that are worked out to augment your situation? Because these overheads, they are necessary, because you are doing quite a sterling work in terms of developing especially young scientists in the country. But then the question begs, you know, the patterns of expenditure are such that you're spending it on overheads, the bulk of your of the available funds, and as opposed to the core business of Council for Geosciences. Now, the slides, they are not numbered, but you have a stakeholder customer perspective slide. My interest would be on the number of maps and publications that you are focusing, which is 5. Is this not too low, given the amount of work that you have indicated that you still have to undertake? Would this not be targeting less? Or you are targeting this figure because of the constraints in terms of the availability of funding. Now, the other aspect is to do with what you had raised here pertaining to a slide which contains that image of some explosion. Your heading here is Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty. What is this ban? If you could explain to us, you know, what does it relate to? And you illustrated it in terms of the figure that you have placed there. Then the other matter, which I think is related to the potential for the storage of the carbon dioxide, and the work, we want to counterpose that to the work that we are doing with ESCOM in terms of its build program. Now, there is this debate across the country, and that also extends beyond our borders, about the potentials to store nuclear waste. It's one thing to assist them in terms of, you know, examining soil conditions and other conditions for them to can be able to put up nuclear plants. But then the very big question which scares almost all of us is where then do you store, you know, this nuclear waste, given the potential hazardness of such radioactive material. Those would be the questions. I think the honourable member dealt with the issue of the human with the human capital. I think you are doing quite a sterling work. The fact that you have turned the situation from the aging scientists to very young scientists is quite encouraging, because it has been a worrisome kind of situation. But now this guarantees us, you know, the future as well. Please, would you care to respond to those, to all of those?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Member. The first one on acid mine drainage, what is our role there? The funds which have been allocated there are basically focusing on research. The process of which is currently run by Water Affairs is implementing the recommendations of the team of expert report, which was actually sanctioned by the interministerial committee. So that is basically engineering, because if you look at those recommendations, the heart of the recommendations there is that we need to pump the water. We've got three basins, the Western Basin, the Central Basin, and the Eastern Basin. So the recommendations are, let's pump the water to a level which is appropriate in terms of protecting the environment and then treating that water. So those are engineering activities. You need lots of funds for that. These funds which are there, they can't do that. It is mainly to do research. If you look at what has happened, and a lot of people are not aware of it, the Department of Mineral Resources has been funding the research in this quarter in terms of acid mine drainage for many, many years, plus minus 7 years that they've been funding it. And the recommendations which are in the report, they are as a result of this funding which the department has been doing for plus minus 7 years. Okay? And this money which they've given us, the 17 million plus for this current year, it will be looking at research, looking at ahead. I've talked about the coal mining area. We'll be starting again there, looking at the problem. Because you have to understand the problem before you can come with any recommendations. You know, 7 years ago, very few people understood the problem of acid mine drainage. There were a few scientists here, some universities doing here, but this program went to the department. Decided to engage the Council for Geoscience and say, we will finally do this research, has created an environment whereby we understand what is happening in terms of that. And we are basically on top of it now. Yes, there are challenges, but we are on top of that. And this research is going to address that. But we'll also be working with the Department of Water Affairs in terms of implementing some of the recommendations, especially the whole issue of addressing the ingress. Because when you look at it, this water which is polluted there, it comes from the rain. Rainwater just came in there. So what was the, and then it flows into rivers and streams and then goes into this mine working. What we are saying is, if we can identify all these ingress points, okay, and close these ingress points if it's possible, or divert the water around these ingress points, we will reduce the pollution in the water. So we'll also be doing a lot of work in terms of addressing that. We have actually started. We're just discussing with the Department of Minerals and Energy in terms of the plan and concretizing the plan. So it's a very important funding research program for the one which is currently being driven by Water Affairs is engineering, implementing the solution. The whole issue of seismic activities, can we predict the seismic activity? I think I will ask Harold to address it, Dr. Graham. Look at, talk about, can we predict earthquakes? And also that project of mine health and safety in terms of fatalities, where are we, what have we done? And perhaps it could actually also touch on tsunami, because they are linked. When it, the risk of South Africa when it comes to the land.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Unfortunately, it's prediction of earthquakes is a global concern, and it's not been very successful. The recent experiences, I think, of the Japanese showed us that again. In terms of mine health and safety, the argument has always been it's a much smaller area, so if we know enough of the area, we can at least get to a stage where we can issue some sort of an alarm. It's not necessarily a prediction, because a prediction is too specific in terms of exactly where, when, how large will it be. But if one can see changes in the mining environment, you could alert the mine management or the miners to this change, and I think this is what I explained last time when we spoke about this, is that rock can behave in certain conditions a little bit like water. It starts flowing, it starts moving, and this is normally what we see when there's changes in the stress in the mines due to the mining. Now, where are we with mine health and safety? Council, in terms of the project, it started towards the end of last year. Of course, a lot of time went into it's really a logistical arrangement in getting the data to the Council for Geoscience. We've never had access to the data from these mines, and it's quite a large technological challenge that we have to overcome to get all this data into our system as well. We're busy with that. We're also busy with identifying sites where new equipment will go in. This will be our equipment, in, when I say our, meaning between the CGS and mine health and safety, so the mines will have no control over this equipment, but yet it has to be on their property. So as you can imagine, there was a lot of discussion and debate with mine management in terms of where the equipment can go in, and this is it's happening, and we're now at a stage where we can actually procure the equipment, and most of this equipment will have to come from overseas. In the meantime, there are two projects running in parallel. They both in a way deal with rock falls, because this is what we find. It's not necessarily the large events in the mining areas that cause the fatalities. It can be the fairly small events that trigger rock falls, because it's the rock fall that will kill the miners, not so much the event itself. In that sense, there are two projects. We've got a small team of people working on this. On the one hand, we're busy gathering information where we're relating fatalities to rock falls and also the geological conditions at the time of the rock fall. So it's really building up an extensive database and knowledge, and we're already interacting with the department, the DMR, and also with some of the mines, because what we're hoping to achieve here is to, as we learn from what happened in the past, we can also discuss this with the mines, and perhaps suggest in future some sort of precautions that can be taken in certain conditions or under certain conditions in the mines, in particular the types of geology that the miners will encounter. The second project is more aimed at looking directly at the rock falls related to the seismicity that occur and reworking that data. So this data we're getting from the mines, we combine it with some of our own. This is historic data, it's not new data. And it's a it's a sort of reanalysis that we're doing to more directly understand what is different from this event that occurred in a particular mine, led to a rockfall, and another event that did not cause a rockfall. And as we learn from this process, we will certainly engage the different mines and provide them with information. In terms of tsunamis, the equipment that we have in South Africa, I think the first we need to understand is that for the size of South Africa, we have 23 stations. If you compare it, for instance, to a country like the United Kingdom, Britain, they have something like 200 stations. So we don't really have enough equipment in South Africa. But the equipment that we have installed is of high quality, and we get very good quality data from it. The recordings of, in particular, the stations that we've identified, along the coastline of South Africa, which are aimed now at the prediction of or the monitoring of potential tsunamis in the Indian Ocean. There's only five of them. What we are doing in this instance, we're working with the National Disaster Management Center, both in Pretoria and also here in Cape Town. There's a link between us so that if there's a particular event that occurred in the sea, because firstly, for a tsunami, you must have a large event somewhere in the ocean. If we record any seismicity in the oceans around South Africa, we alert the National Disaster Management Center. It is then their responsibility to, if we think there will be waves arriving from wherever at the South African coastline, it is then their responsibility to alert those cities or communities that may be affected. For instance, again with the Japanese earthquake, in this instance, of course, we could say, yes, very large event, but South Africa is fortunately in what is known as the shadow zone for Japan, so we don't expect to see any effect of the tsunami in South Africa. But it is important that in future we understand better, because we have a very limited understanding of the effect of large events that occur somewhere along on the globe, at the bottom of the seafloor, to understand the effect of potential tsunami waves on the South African coastline. Certainly there's been a lot said about what could potentially happen if a large wave would hit Cape Town and the Cape Flats in particular, and we would need to get data. We'd need to model this effect of, let's say, and it can be done, it's known technology. If you have a 5 meter high wave arriving in the harbor of Cape Town, what would happen? We can model it. It's really just a question of finding the resources to do so. And it, again, if we think back to the 2004 Boxing Day Indonesian tsunami, we saw waves of up to nearly 2 meters in around Port Elizabeth. It was fortunately with low tide. But if it was at high tide, that 2 meter high wave could have caused a lot more damage than what we actually saw at the time of that tsunami. So these are all, it's knowledge we have, it's data that we have, but it's not in a complete model for South Africa that we really understand. If there's a 6 meter wave arriving in Durban, what sort of flooding can we expect to see along the coast?
Thank you, Chairperson. On fracking and gas sale, whether we have the resource or the reserve, definitely we have got occurrence, it's there, but it has not yet been quantified in terms of resources and reserve. There are figures which people throw out there, but people have never done detailed studies on that, saying what are the reserves, what are the resources. Studies have to be undertaken. Whether we go ahead and exploit the resource is another story, but at least you have to know what is happening in terms of oil sales in the county or gas sales. But the department has put together a task team in this regard, and we are participating in that task team. We definitely have got people in the organization who are doing some research in this regard. They understand, because it's in the Karoo, they map the Karoo, they know what is happening there. So we will definitely provide the necessary assistance to the department. PASA is actually driving this process. We are part of the committee, but we will provide them with the necessary knowledge which we have gathered over many, many, many years as an organization. In terms of scarce skills, what are we doing to address scarce skills, the strategy? I think the whole issue of bursary, in terms of full-time students and part-time students, is a program which has helped the organization greatly there. We had challenges, as I've shown on one of the graphs, that we had to stop funding full-time students, but part-time students, we will continue to fund them, and we will revisit this whole issue and increase the funding in terms of this bursary. Mentorship program, we realize it's a very important thing. We actually have got a consultant who assists us in this project, because, you know, when you train a scientist, it's a very unique way of training a person. You need to identify the mentor and the protege, and actually develop this rapport, you know. Sometimes it doesn't work, sometimes it works. And we put them through a program, we even take them out on workshops so that they can work together. And if we find that the relationship doesn't work, we change them, we get another mentor or we get another protege to train. It's a program which helps us a lot in terms of addressing skills. Geological mapping school is a very important one, because there we put those people there. It's like a crash course. We are even trying to get the whole course accredited with NQA. We have actually submitted our request to have it accredited. Even some universities are envying us. They've actually approached us and said, can we put our honor students there? Because they don't have something like that. So we look at the national program which we can put together. And even some of our colleagues from other African countries, you know, they have indicated that, you know, if this school can be properly resourced, maybe if we talk to the AU or other organization and we have it properly resourced, they can even come in, they can even send some of their youngsters to be trained at that school. When it comes to the whole issue of women, we, as you have seen, the graph went down. We battled when we decided to freeze the post. So when they were resigning, we did not see some of those posts as part of cost-cutting measures which we put in place. But with the situation having stabilized like this, I think the whole issue will be re-looked at. We are starting to fill in some of those posts. If you look, I must show you a graph. So what are we doing to address the whole issue of this? I didn't show you this one, also. Because we realize the important thing is to train young people, to fund some of the females at university. And if you look at 2010 there, okay, in terms of our power, we're finding more females than males. That actually helps us in terms of getting females into the organization. Trying to recruit them from private sector into the organization is a challenge because of it's a challenge in terms of that. And they poached them. There was one who was working in Sarah's area. She was just pushed last month, eh? And we trained her for how many years?
Four
years. We put her through everything, and that is 4 or 5 years, because they know that now they're becoming independent. You know, they push them. They won't push them after 1 year or so. Eh? They wait for them. When they have done 4 or 5 years, they push them. but we have to train more and more and more and flood the whole system. I think that's the only way in which you can address the situation. On ownerless and derelict mines.
How far are we, Dr. Ramuncha?
Okay.
We are now poaching on time for maintenance.
Okay, I will just touch key words. Ownerless and derelict mines, our role here is to support the department in terms of research. Just like we support them in terms of the acid mine drainage, we support them in terms of research, developing databases for them. The database which they have now was developed by us. On preferential procurement is actually BEE procurement. It's in terms of how National Treasury defines it. They've got a formula for us. Government grant, is it enough? Yes, there is a challenge there. We have put a detailed proposal to the department and the National Treasury last year. Unfortunately, National Treasury did not fund us, but we will try them again this year. I think in the next few weeks they'll be asking us to put forward a proposal. We have got it. It's ready. We can resubmit it again to address that issue. Also on aging equipment, that proposal has got issues around aging equipment. But Department of Science and Technology has also come forward and said, look, we should actually also put forward a proposal to them. We have done that. They said they will look at it from a science perspective. On small-scale mining, yes, there is a big challenge in terms of supporting small-scale miners there, because banks are not necessarily interested in supporting small-scale miners. So maybe what needs to be done here is like a special fund of some kind. The department had a fund, but I don't think it's enough for such a program. It's a high-risk environment, you know. So we could look at it and discuss it further with the department, but it is always going to be a challenge because people are not willing to fund exploration. They say, no, it's high-risk environment. But we need to find ways in which we can give them a support, like training, yeah? Training small-scale miners in this thing. We were in discussion with MQA on that process, whereby we say, look, let's come with a program to train small-scale miners, build capacity, providing the math. I think you talked about the whole issue. Are they expensive or not? They are definitely not expensive. Those nets, they go for 300 rand. Okay. We can't, and to produce that map, it will cost you plus minus 1 million rand. So, but we can't recover that money. So it's actually part of the work of the Council for Future Science to empower people and attract investors. But it becomes expensive if somebody wants detailed, you know, electronic data. Then we don't actually give it to them. We have to pay the but basically a map is 300 rand. It's accessible. It will show you the geology, it will show you where all these minerals are. It's not a lot of money. The boundary with regards to extended continental shelf, what are the challenges there? Yes, there will be challenges, but the Department of International Relations and Cooperation is working on it, especially the boundary between South Africa and Namibia. You know, it has never been agreed upon. You know, I think they are working on that. They have to work with the Namibians. Similar with Mozambique also, those boundaries that people haven't yet finalized them. But besides that, you can still submit your claim as a country, which we have done. Oil, do we have oil offshore? I think Bafa can answer that much better than I can answer it, but I don't think we are an attractive country when it comes to oil. We've got talent in terms of geology. Inland, the area where we could have got lots of oil was where we have got this gas shale, you know, the Karoo. But then what happened there was the oil was there at some point, but it basically got bent by other rocks which intruded later on. So the issue of oil is a challenge for South Africa. But the gas, there is a potential in terms of that gas, especially in the shale. There is certainly a potential. Carbon dioxide, sequestration, the relationship between them and Fraki. If you look at that, we did look at the Karoo in terms of where can we store this carbon dioxide. But the areas which have been identified currently, they are outside those areas of the Fraki. And the other one will be decline in commercial activity. This was just because of the whole area of global economic recession. It affected us because we rely on the World Bank and the EU to fund most of our projects, you know, especially in the African continent. Most countries can't fund those projects. They're quite expensive. So the EU, the World Bank just cut. So that's why we had very few projects. But the situation has changed. I mean, we have just submitted a big tender in Angola, $230 million. It will be the biggest tender if we win it, which the organization will have to, which organization could have won. But if you look at the other areas, what, Zimbabwe, the East, actually also they have submitted a tender in Zimbabwe. We are hoping to submit a tender in Tanzania. I think the environment is totally changing. How much was the Zimbabwe one? $30 million.
$42 million.
So there are huge projects which are in the pipeline there. Cost-cutting measures. These are cost-cutting measures which, you know, the board and the management decided on them. They didn't, the instructions to cut costs didn't come from National Treasury. It was an internal decision to address the problem. The issue of NEP 5 law, yes, we can increase the number of NEPs, but it is all around, you know, funding of those NEPs. We can look at it if we get funding. Comprehensive test ban treaty, we want to address that, Harold.
The CTBT is it's the first comprehensive ban on nuclear testing. There's been a number of treaties over the years, but this that was signed by South Africa in 1996 is the first comprehensive ban. What our role basically in this is the monitoring of any clandestine testing. So it's really developing a technology because no one really knows how. There are many ways to hide a nuclear explosion. This is the largest network that the world has ever seen. There's probably about 300-400 different types of stations across the globe. And this is all about developing the technology so that no nuclear test anywhere on the globe, whether it's in the sea, on land, or in atmosphere, will go undetected.
And this potential to store nuclear waste, yes, it is a challenge in South Africa. We'll still have to do that study. In fact, we have initiated the process of putting together a case study on this matter, but we have not prioritized it. But ideally, if you do the research to identify sites for nuclear plants, you must actually also undertake the study to identify where you store this nuclear waste. It is an issue which needs to be addressed by the organization. But you have to, the government in one way or another must give their support to this matter. But as I said earlier, we can do this because we have this knowledge of the rocks, the mapping which we have undertaken. So we can do it for the country. It's not a big deal for us.
Okay. Does that cover you? Thank you very much. Honourable members, I think Council for Geoscience has taken us through their strategy and in a much more detailed fashion. They've responded to your questions. Shall we approve this strategy? Because it's not different from that of the department and also from the ones that they've presented, which were long-term. Can I get your views? Honourable Bigani?
Yes, Chair, I think I support the fact that we can approve the strategy.
Any second? Honorable Schmidt. Thank you very much. Let's thank you, Dr. Amuncha, and your team. And indeed, this is not the last engagement, as you are aware. We would further engage with yourselves in terms of looking at the progress. There might also be specific issues that we want some details on, and therefore invite you to engage with us. If opportunity arises, once again, we'll repeat the visit to your premises. But thank you very much for setting time aside to come and address us on the strategic plan. Shall we allow honorable members, MinTech, to then set up their system? And meanwhile, we take tea for and body break for 5 to 10 minutes. Thank you very much. I'm